maybe for the last time, Sunday night shir. Chavis halava shir habachina, the Sunday women's chavis halava shir. And I'm going to go back and give, you see I'm surrounded by my clay Zion for tonight. But I want to, I want to give like an overview of where we're holding. We're talking about Shar HaBechina, which the Chayot HaLovus wants us to take seriously. To study these things, to study Niflos HaBorei, and it's so easy to do nowadays. First of all, it's so much more, it's a thousandfold more remarkable that it's a thousandfold more remarkable that's what's known. What's known is a thousandfold more remarkable than in the days of the Chavis HaLovos. And he was like, oh my God. And he said that it's only a drop in the bucket, but he's not writing a science book, he's writing a Hashkafa book. So he's only touching upon certain things. So, but he wants us to spend time on it and thinking about it. And we know, and the purpose is to develop a sense of the reality of Hashem and the grandeur of Hashem and a sense of gratitude towards Hashem when we realize that Auf jede Tritt und Stritt, that's a Yiddish expression, right? Mm-hmm. And every move we make, every little nuance, every time we move a finger, it's utterly amazing if we know what a muscle is and what a tendon is and what a joint is. And the electric impulses. I mean, you can just go on and on. If any, the smallest thing that we do, and then that's just the person, and then there's the whole world, and the gravity, and the atmosphere. It's limitless. He wants us to think about it a little in Shara Bechina. And he gave us a list in the fourth parak of the seven disciplines, and now in Shara Bechina, in the fifth parak, he's saying, listen, let's focus on biology, on the person. And you will be overwhelmed. So he started off. I'm just giving a quick synopsis of where we're holding. I didn't develop yet a firm mahalach. I did a little more research, a little more focused. So hopefully it'll be more focused. First he talks about, you know, the very fact that we exist, which we don't think about perhaps enough. We take our existence for granted, the fact that we exist, and we used to not exist, and now we exist. So that's the first thing. That needs no elaboration. What it needs is thinking about, which people have to think about it. It's as simple as that. If anybody ever, maybe someone who was facing Chas v'Shalom, you know, sakana or mortality because of an illness or because of an operation or because of an accident or because someone very close to them, so they have a palpable knowledge of mortality, you know, and that, so we have what to be thankful for, just that. Then he talks about the development of non-organic matter to organic matter, and how things become vegetable, and the basic food stuff of the basic energy giver for growth and this transformation is food. So we go from dirt, from inorganic matter to organic matter, and then it becomes food, which is nutrition. And as it goes from plant into food, meaning something that has nutrition, and it goes into an animal or into a person, and it becomes the stuff of life. And it becomes blood, and it becomes the zera with which they give birth, and it becomes their koach and their intelligence, and it's amazing. Like, so he talks about first our existence and the transformations that are undergone till the person exists, the transformation from inorganic matter to organic matter, the transformation from organic matter to food, and the transformation that takes place when a person eats food, right? And that makes a person grow and have all the things that his body can produce because of the food he eats. And that's all amazing transformation, almost yesh me'ayin, almost yesh me'ayin. Okay, then he talks about a human being that's so much more than an animal, because an animal also eats, and the food is transformed into life. Food is transformed into life. There's a pasuk by Maaser Sheni that says, "Lo nasati mimenu lemeis." Maaser Sheni, you have to eat, or if you change it for money, you have to use the money for food, and you're not allowed to use it for other things. You can't buy a winter coat with it. You can't buy a towel with it. You have to use it for food. It's Maaser Sheni money. We don't, if anybody's acquainted with Maaser Sheni, we just uphold it in a coin that's somewhere in our drawer, and twice in 7 years we break it up and throw it in the ocean. Or we ask Rabbi Mlinow what's going to do with it. But really you're supposed to take the full value of whatever the Maaser Sheni is and take it to Yerushalayim and eat it. We don't have the Yerushalayim HaKodesh that has the requisite Kedusha, no Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, so the pasuk says Lo nasati mimenu lemeis. It's cryptic. I didn't give it for the dead. So Rashi learns it means you didn't even do a mitzvah with it. You're saying I did. I acted appropriately with the Maaser Sheni, so I ate it. So the pasuk says I didn't give it to the dead. A little cryptic. Tales from the crypt. Cryptic. So the Rashi says, I didn't even do a mitzvah with it. Buy Aron and Tachrichim for a mace. That would be a mitzvah. And that's what the pasuk's saying, because you can't do that. So I didn't even do a mitzvah with it if it wasn't food. And others have different pshatim, but the Rambam really has a fascinating pshat. The Rambam says food is life. That's the pasuk that says you have to use it for food, because food gets transformed into life. Any other use of the Maaser Sheni other than food, it would come to a dead end. It's death. It's dead. Food is life. A person eats it, and it becomes that person's blood, and his koach, and his energy, and whatever he does is now that food. So that's how you learn out that you have to eat. That's very fascinating. That's how you learn out. That's how he sees the pasuk, that you have to eat it. Because the pasuk says, don't give it to the dead. Don't make dead use of it. Make live use of it. So, and that's life. Anyway, so that would be amazing in itself. Then we have to thank Hashem for all these things, plus the fact that we're humans and we have ideals and principles, and we want to accomplish, and we want to have goals, and we want to make a better world, and we think, and we have ideas. So that's, that is amazing, amazing, amazing. I'm overview. This is all the things the Chavos HaLevavos says, it like in one sentence. But if we would think about these things, we would think about them hopefully for days, for weeks. Then comes, we have a neshama. That's amazing. Where have the neshama get in? Through the back door, through the front door. Where's it from? And that's life. That's mamish life. Like, we don't know what life and death is, but the neshama leaves a person, and the body's dead. The body's perfectly fine. It's why did it stop functioning? Because the neshama left it. But the very fact that there's a kesher between a dover ruchni and a dover gashmi is amazing, amazing, amazing. The Rama says in Shulchan Aruch, Baruch Ato Hashem, Rofei Chol Bosor Mafli La'asos. So the Yashi Yatzar is talking about the physical body. You know, obviously, chalulim, chalulim, mekovim, mekovim, godoy v'yandu, alef nechisei chalodecha, etc., etc., etc. Rofei chol basar, okay, he heals all flesh, healing that we shouldn't comely deicholi, that's the best healing possible. And then it says again, a cryptic phrase, umafli la'asos, and he does wondrous things. What is that referring to? You know, usually a bracha is pretty straightforward and clear. Here it's like, so what is it? So the Rama in Shulchan Aruch says it's referring to the pele of Hashem being kosher, a davar gashmi and a davar ruchni. And like, how do you do that? What's the adhesive tape between two things that have no shaykhis, no kesher, and Hashem in his wisdom, and that's the point of the Bria, and that's the ultimate goal of the Bria. And Hashem took two things which are really low kosher sepza, and he tied them together. With what? We don't know with what. But then he says where the adhesive tape is. He says the adhesive tape is in the blood of the person that contains his life force is in the blood. The life force being also the neshama. We you know, if we're forced into giving it a physical place, really it's not physical, so it has no place. But like, so where is it in the person? It's in the blood, because blood is life. Blood is the life force of a person. We all know that. And we talked about blood, and you can look up about blood. And at the very least of its function is that it, maybe not the very least, it delivers all the nutrients to all the parts of the body.
But it's still all physical. Isn't it?
What? Yeah, but that's what the Chavis Haldovus. Well, we only know physical. We can't conceive of spiritual. We're taking the Chavis Haldovus' word for it, that the it's like you say, where heaven touches earth. So is there such a place? We don't know. Where day touches night. You know, we don't know. It's called Bein Hashmashos. You know, there are things in the world which are gray areas. So where does the physical touch the spiritual? So we don't know. The Rebbe says, in the blood of a person, body heat, the warmth of the body, that's a manifestation or a sign of life, that blood. You know, we think of the, whatever it is, the thermostat the body has and the technicality of the physicality. But that's really the Rebbe HaLevavos, at least. I don't know how he knew or why he's saying it, or I can't bring a riot to what he's saying, but he's saying these are the things in which are binding the life force of the neshama to the guf of the person. The blood, he says, the body heat, then he talks about the veins or the nerves, the arteries, whichever words the different translations use. These are all things with the blood. These are all things that are the nerves, I don't know whether the nerves are, but that's what he says. Now I want to go to the next sentence. So that's so far like an overview of what we learned so far. And like that would give us enough to think about for probably 2-3 decades. And, you know, if we would think, if we would have a program, and you could make a program to think about these things. But we're moving on. We're learning the Chavis HaLevavos. So his next thing is, he's still talking about the makeup of a person. So he mentions the things that are there for protection. He says, then Hashem made things to protect these, as if it's to protect the body heat and the blood and the veins and the nerves and the arteries, right? So he mentions 5 things. Flesh, bones, muscles, 6 things. Flesh, bone, muscles, skin, hair, and nails. They have to protect, and that's to make sure they're not harmed and they're enclosed by these things. So I did a little research. I did it, and I'll read to you a little. I'll bore you again. You'll tell me if it's not a good way to. And I looked into these things, and the truth is, I don't know if the Chavis HaLevavos didn't know it, which is okay. But I looked up each of these things, and they do so much. It's not a science textbook, the Chavis HaLevavos, but definitely protection is one of the main functions that they have. But there's so much more. So I don't know if the Chavis HaLevavos just didn't want to elaborate, or maybe he held that he's giving us the picture of a person. He's saying this is their primary purpose. Hashem made them primarily to protect. While they're doing that, he threw in a couple of other freebies, what they should do. So let's talk about bones. So I'll just read to you. From our head to our toes, bones provide support for our bodies and help form our shape. The skull protects the brain and forms the shape of our face. The spinal cord, which is the pathway for messages between the brain and the body, is protected by the backbone, or the spinal column. The ribs form a cage that shelters the heart, lungs, liver, and spleen. The pelvis helps protect the bladder, intestines, and in women, the reproductive organs. So that's like that, you know, if I Googled this, and like this is what bones are primarily. It's protection. Although they're very light, bones are strong enough to support our entire weight. The human skeleton has 206 bones, which begins to develop before birth. Now I'm just reading Shar HaBechina stuff. When the skeleton first forms, it's made of flexible cartilage, but within a few weeks it begins the process of ossification, and that means the cartilage is replaced by hard deposits of calcium phosphate and stretchy collagen, the two main components of bone. It takes 20 years for this process to be completed. The bones of kids and young teens are smaller than those of adults and contain growth zones called growth plates. These plates consist of columns of multiplying cartilage cells that grow in length and then change into hard mineralized bone. Because girls mature at an earlier age than boys, their growth plates change into hard bone at an earlier age. Bone building continues throughout life as the body constantly renews and reshapes the body's living tissue. Bones contain three types of cells: osteoblasts, which makes new bone and helps repair damage; osteocytes, which carry nutrients and waste products to and from blood vessels in the bone; and osteoclasts, because one, I said that already, which break down bone and help to sculpt and shape it. And it goes through this. It's made up of calcium, phosphorus, sodium, and other minerals, and as well as the protein COLLAGEN. Calcium is needed to make bones hard, which allows them to support body weight. Bones store calcium and release some into the bloodstream when it's needed by other parts of the body. You know, you read a sentence like that, and like, what do you mean it does that? Like, why does it do that? The amounts of certain vitamins and minerals that you eat, especially vitamin D and calcium, directly affects how much calcium is stored in the bones. The soft bone marrow inside many of the bones is where most of the blood cells are made. The bone marrow contains stem cells, which produce the body's red blood cells and platelets, and some types of white blood cells. Red blood cells carry oxygen to the body's tissue, and platelets help with blood clotting when someone has a cut or wound. Then he talks about bones are made up of two types of bones: compact bone and cancellous bones. Okay, so that's bone. Then he talks about muscles. So muscles also protect. Bones don't work alone. Because I've always said muscles. Right. Bones don't work alone. They need help from the muscles and joints. Muscles pull on the joints, allowing us to move. They also help your body perform other functions so that you can grow, such as chewing food and then moving it through the digestive system. That's all done by muscles. The human body has more than 650 muscles, which make up half of a person's body weight. They're connected to bones by tough cord-like tissues called tendons, which allow the muscles to pull on bones. If you wiggle your fingers, you can see the tendons on the back of your hand move as they do their work. Humans have three different kinds of muscles. I'm not going to read that. Skeletal muscles, but these muscles hold the skeleton together, give the body shape, and help it with everyday movements. Smooth or involuntary muscles is made of fibers, and you don't control them. They're controlled by the nervous system automatically. That's the walls of the stomach and intestines, which help break up food and move it through the digestive system. It's found in the walls of blood vessels. And cardiac muscles, which is found in the heart. The walls of the heart's chambers are compressed, are almost composed entirely of muscle fibers. And it just works. Its rhythmic, powerful contractions force blood out of the heart as it beats. Even as we sit perfectly still, muscles throughout the body are constantly moving. Muscles enables the heart to beat, the chest to rise and fall during breathing, and blood vessels to help regulate the pressure and flow of blood throughout the body. When we smile and talk, muscles help us communicate, and when we exercise, they help us stay physically fit and healthy. The movements your muscle makes are coordinated and controlled by the brain and nervous system. The involuntary muscles are controlled by structures deep within the brain. Voluntary muscles are controlled by the parts of the brain known as the cerebral motor cortex and the cerebellum. Okay, so I don't see really where muscle protects, quite frankly. Muscles move body parts by contracting and then relaxing.
The abdomen. The abdomen doesn't have a
the heart is a muscle.
Yeah, so.
So how does it protect it?
The abdominal muscles protect the intestines.
Okay, I mean, the very fact that the muscle is part of the bone. It says muscles.
Something when you're above the organ.
Or maybe it protects it in the sense that that you everything we do is really muscles working, muscles at work, chewing food, moving it through the digestive system. I mean, we have 650 muscles. Everything that goes on in our body is really, it's like muscles doing it. Yes.
The abdominal muscles protect the intestines. There's no
okay.
bone protecting them, only muscle.
Okay. Then there's, okay, joints, I'm not going to talk about, but the joints where two bones meet. We have three types of joints: hinge joints, pivot joints, and ball and socket joints. If you want to know problems you could have, if you want to be a hypochondriac, you can have arthritis, fracture, muscular dystrophy, Osgood-Schlatter disease.
Oh, my husband had that.
Osteoporosis. Yeah, unfortunately, the best Shar HaBechina is when something stops working 100%. That's when we appreciate it. Sprains. Sprains occur when the muscles or tendons are overstretched. Okay, now with the skin, because the Lotus mentioned skin. Oh, here, I'm sorry. While humans have developed clothing and other means of keeping warm, the hair found on the head serves as a primary sources of heat insulation and cooling when sweat evaporates from soaked hair, as well as protection from ultraviolet radiation exposure. That's all the hair. The function of hair in cold locations, you still need hats and coats to prevent frostbite, but the hair on the human body helps to keep the internal temperature regulated. When the body is too cold, the erector pili muscles found attached to hair follicles stand up, causing the hair in these follicles to do the same. The hairs then form a heat-trapping layer above the epidermis. Did you know this? This process is formally called pilioerection, derived from the Latin words pilus, which is hair, and erectio, which is stiffening, and is more commonly known as having goosebumps. This is more effective in other mammals whose fur fluffs up to create air pockets between hairs to insulate the body from the cold. I think you see that in cats.
Yeah.
Dogs.
Winter, yeah. So having goosebumps makes you warmer?
Yeah.
Rabbi, it sounds like the muscles assist the other places in protecting the body.
Yeah.
It makes it work. So it would be
hard
to get it. So he says hair is primarily is to protect you from cold and heat. Human hair may not compete with the painful spines of the porcupine, but much of the hair of the human body is suited to protect it. This natural armor doesn't protect you from predators, but it helps keep the sense organs, such as the eyes, working properly. Okay, so it does protect. Eyelashes and eyebrows, which are hair, help to protect the eyes from dust, dirt, and sweat. The eyebrows provide some protection to the eyes from dirt, sweat, and rain. Okay, I'm skipping over what else it does, but I'm just talking about the protection element. The eyelash grows at the edge of the eyelid and protects the eye from dirt. The eyelash is to humans what whiskers are to cats. They are used to sense when dirt, dust, or other potentially harmful object is too close to the eye. The eye reflexively closes as a result of this sensation.
But the cat judges how wide the opening is that they can fit through it.
Yeah.
Okay, nails. Because the lovers' nails is a protection. A healthy nail has the function of protecting the fingertip. I use the scientific word here.
Uh-huh.
And the surrounding soft tissues from injuries. It also serves to enhance precise, delicate movements through counter pressure exerted on the pulp of the finger. The nail acts as a counterforce when the end of the finger touches an object, enhancing the sensitivity of the fingertip, even though there are no nerve endings in the nail. Okay. Finally, the nail functions as a tool. You could take out a splinter with your fingers. But so the protection of the nail is it protects the fingertip because there's very soft tissue around there. Okay.
You would know that if you ever lost your nail.
Yeah.
Very painful.
Oh, skin. We didn't talk about skin. Because the first thing he said was skin.
Largest organ of the body.
What?
It's the largest organ of the body.
How it protects. Skin is the outer covering of vertebrae animals, is the largest organ of the body, thank you, and has many different functions. Skin is very important as it covers and protects everything inside your body. Without skin, your bones, muscles, and organs would be hanging out all over the place. Skin holds everything together. It protects our bodies, helps keep our bodies at just the right temperature, and through nerve endings close to the surface of the skin allows us to have the sense of touch. And the skin can be infected with bacteria and viruses and fungi. The structure of the skin, I remember with the epidermis,
I remember reading something like it replaces itself every so often.
Self-repair. Yeah. Body cells can detect how crowded they are, the cell density. When cell density decreases, cell division occurs. You know, we're just reading this as if it's normal. Cell division occurs to make new cells. And when cell density increases, the rate of cell division slows down. This process is usually strictly controlled in the body. When that control mechanism fails and cell divisions continues at an abnormally high rate, that's how tumors occur. Mm-hmm. That's how a tumor mm-hmm. gets there.
Also gets rid of poisons and
cell division is important in skin repair after a cut and other injury to the skin. On the cut surface, cell density is lowered, stimulating cell division. New cells gradually fill in the gap. And once the normal cell density is reached again, cell division slows down to the normal rate. Usually a cut will first fill up with blood, which clots and forms a scab. And underneath the scab, the new tissue is being produced to heal the wound.
Does it say how, I don't remember what it was, like how in every 3 days or every certain, you're in all new skin? Does it say that anywhere? Like your body is totally replaced.
Like molting.
Yeah, we do.
There is.
See it.
It's true.
I don't remember 3 days, 5 days. I think it's like every 3 weeks, a certain amount of time. I don't remember.
Oh, there's also stuff in the. It helps you make your skin waterproof. That's why you don't get soggy in the bath. No, keratinin.
It's so
the epidermis
lotions.
And oil produced by the something glands, yes, help to make our skin waterproof. This is why we don't go soggy in the bath or dry up in the sun.
Although if you stay too long, your fingers do get like prunes.
millions of microorganisms live harmlessly on the skin and in the air around us. The skin forms a very effective barrier to stop them entering the body unless damaged, which is how an infection happens. We are lucky that skin, we are lucky that skin can repair itself.
Mm-hmm.
Skin cancer, okay, we don't want to read about that. Okay. Let me see how these books are. Can I read something from one of these books?
I heard skin as an example of Hashem, the Kadesh B'Pal Yom Kavim, I said, where she says that skin replaces itself.
I guess originally from the person, and then they put sheets of it.
Let's try here. Here's muscles. You gotta get these books, ladies. These books are very, very entertaining. Because he has a very unique style. He starts off with.
There's
someone on Brum Katz. He wrote these three books. Maybe they're out of print already. One's Feldheim, one's Art Scroll, one's. Okay, maybe enough. Let's learn more. Excellent. So now we're moving along, and now he talks about the fetus, which is. I don't know if women know how amazing it is. Maybe they do. You read books, so maybe you read books.
Never with experience.
You don't know how amazing it is. You don't know the Nissan that. I experience my eye every day, and I'm not aware of the Nissan involved in my eye working.
Abominovitz, the most amazing thing about a pregnancy is that the body doesn't reject it. Because half the genetic material comes from the husband.
So let me read this. How the baby survives the mother's immune system. Human bodies readily reject organ transplants, which is why immunosuppressants are prescribed to people who have to undergo transplants. However, a fetus is not rejected by the mother's immune system. How the body makes this decision has been studied for a long time. Now a new discovery has answered this age-old question. Okay, it turns out, now again, this is nothing wrong with learning this, this is how Hashem does it. The trick is to realize that there's a mechanism that deals with an apparent problem, with a contradiction in the body. So this, when was this? This is like recently, this is in the last 20 years. It turns out, luckily, that as soon as the embryo implants itself, it sets off a mechanism that turns off the immune response against it. Thus, the immune response does not recognize the embryo as a foreign body. And now, from the New York University Medical Center and the author of the study, our manuscript addresses the fundamental questions in the field of transplantation immunology and reproductive biology, namely, how do the fetus and the placenta, which express antigens that are disparate from the mother, avoid being rejected by the maternal immune system during pregnancy? What we found, this is like recent, what we found was completely unexpected at every level. Chemokines, C-H-E-M-O-K-I-N-E-S, are responsible for triggering the immune response. During pregnancy, these chemokin genes are shut down.
So you know, are they open to all kinds of other things?
Yes,
Yeah.
If the chemokins were allowed to respond normally, they would accumulate the T cells and kill the enemy, the fetus. It turns out that the cells that typically secrete the chemoattractant to bring the T cells to sites of inflammation are inhibited from doing so in the context of the pregnant uterus. I mean, you see, this is a very exciting finding for us because it gives us an explanation for why. No, it doesn't. It just says how. It doesn't say why. Right? That's the trick here.
Is that I
couldn't tell you. I guess only to the uterus.
Because otherwise,
she'd
mother would be getting sick all the time.
Yeah. She wouldn't have any
T cells.
That's why there's always the warnings for, you know, for pregnant women not to be around, you know, certain.
Okay, the Chavis HaLovitz then discusses the development of the fetus. He says, then you have to think about Chashov, that he gave the fetus a place, a place to be in the mother's womb, to develop, Mokum Shomur, a safe place. It's not hot, it's not cold, it eats, it gets nutrition. I'm going to see in a second how that all works. And it's relaxes. Nobody can bother it. No stress. Doesn't have to go to school. Doesn't have to wake up in the morning. And the amazing thing is how the amount of nutrients increase to it as it needs it. That's a nice. Okay, then he talks about childbirth. So I went into, you know, the fertilization, and then.
One of the things that I think most mothers are aware of is when you first hear the heartbeat, you know, feel the heartbeat, like it goes from like not even, it's like, and then all of a sudden it's, right, the heart is beating. From where, you know, from where?
Kicking.
And then kicking. Perfect, it's a heartbeat.
But the development is amazing. He says at 3 weeks, the embryo measures 4 millimeters in length and begins to curve into a C shape. The heart bulges. Like, where's it developing from? This is like from the fertilization. It's like from what? It's like it's a seed. It's an ace. It's an ace. So they talk, so here is a breakdown of the development. The heart begins to beat at 3 weeks old. 3 weeks young, I don't know what you call it. 3 weeks. At 3 weeks, branchial arches, grooves which will form the structures of the face and neck form. The neural tube closes. The ears begin to form as otic pits. Arm buds and a tail are visible. First traits of the lung appear. This is at 3 weeks.
The tail.
I mean, yeah, this is a picture of at 9 weeks. Okay, let me see if this.
In the beginning, it looks like everything else, but
see, something happens at Al-Pi Chazal, something very specific happens at 40 days,
right,
which would be at what, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And around 5 weeks, 6 weeks. It's only called a fetus after 8 weeks. I didn't know that. Anyway, there's a whole.
What happens after 40 days? I'll be his own.
It becomes, it gets a neshama. It becomes, it's called, it gets legal status. It gets legal status, and you have to deal with it as a fetus.
How
before 40 days, it's called, like, it's just a bunch of cells, Taka.
Does that mean that
it's much more kal to talk about it.
Really?
Before 40 days, the poskim are much more kal. There's still potential life there, and you have to, but it's potential. It's not. You know, a fetus, we say, has a neshama, has, it's maybe, it's unthinkable, you know, it's us, or absolutely, before 40 days, that's how come we'll make it.
You said a heart is already beating.
Maybe it has no neshama yet. It's just a bunch of, you know. In halacha, before 40 days, you don't have to bring a korban. If a woman has a miscarriage, you don't bring a korban. It's not called a leida. It's.
Do they?
No, nothing. Before 40 days, is nothing. The Gemara calls it mayim ba'alma. It's fluid.
Do they time it from the day the woman goes to the mikvah or from?
No, the Gemara is for 40 days from fertilization.
So that would be 8 weeks from.
The baby's the baby swallows amniotic fluid.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. For nutrition, the baby relies solely on the mother. The umbilical cord contains two arteries and a nice. Like, how does this work? Like, who said it should work? Why does it work? All of a sudden, an umbilical cord appears. It contains two arteries and a vein. The cord connects to the placenta, with the placenta being an organ with a side connected to the mother and a side connected to the baby. The placenta is rich in blood supply. The mother's blood carries nutrients and oxygen to the placenta, where they are picked up by the baby's cord and carried to the baby. The baby carries waste products to the placenta, where the mother's blood picks them up and carries them away. The fetal lungs are not used. Although near the due date, the fetus starts to practice breathing movements. When the baby is born and the cord is cut, a rapid change in the baby's body begins. The lungs fill with air and start to work. And the baby becomes able to eat with its mouth and get rid of its wastes into the diaper. The amniotic fluid works as a cushion. This is what Chesopovus talks about. It's like a couch. The amniotic fluid works as a cushion for the fetus in the womb and also as a transport for byproduct, which is passed through the mother's urine.
Why don't they drown?
How does baby breathe while in amniotic fluid? I am wondering how the baby breathes. The question was sent in. How does the baby breathe while in the amniotic fluid? How can the baby breathe in water? The answer is, it doesn't breathe.
Right.
A baby's first breath usually happens at birth when it begins to cry. That's its first breath. While in the womb, the lungs are filled with fluid and are not involved at all in supplying oxygen to the body. The baby gets its oxygen from the mother via the umbilical cord, and it gets its nutrients from the mother in the same way. This is why it's important that a pregnant mother eats healthy food and doesn't smoke, because it's... So the baby doesn't breathe.
But when you just said something about the lungs beginning to work...
It practices breathing movements. The muscles of it. That's what, it's amazing. Like, it's practicing. We breathe to take in oxygen. Oxygen is obviously essential for the functioning of our body. The fetus receives oxygenated blood directly from the mother through the umbilical cord. Hence, the necessity to breathe does not arise. After birth, the umbilical cord is severed. The baby is forced to take in the atmospheric air for its survival. The lungs start functioning after birth. Why is most a scary moment?
That's in the lungs.
Yeah.
The fluid that's in the lungs, how does that expel itself?
The exchange of oxygen and carbon dioxide takes place in the alveoli of the lung.
Alveoli.
How do you not pronounce all these words?
I took tests in my office.
And the baby starts to breathe. You know, I was there like for my first two kids. Then I said, what do I have to be here for? But that, it's very, it's talking like you wait for it to breathe and you wait for it to cry.
Right.
And then even the nurses are a little like tense until like, it takes so that first. Fun. But this is all Nissen. Forgetting about that, it's just life. How did life get there? Okay, we'll stop. And then we're going to learn. Okay, so I hope this was helpful. I hope this was okay. Is this okay, or should we just?
Very interesting.
I'm not.
Okay.
12:15 where?
We don't know yet.
Sure.
We'll announce it. That it'll be in the.
Stay tuned.
Look for your email.
But it's 12.
No, but she wants to put it in the obvious views.
Okay. Well, next week.
Yeah. Tomorrow you weren't here.
No, you should say it's changing to 12:15.